the top 10 things that make investors cringe. So the first and foremost is kind of obvious: liars. People go into a pitch and they tell investors about all these great customers they have and how all these other investors are interested in them. And so, of course, the meetings evolve and then the facts come out and they didn't have these customers. Perhaps they had a really great conversation with a customer, but they didn't have a customer contract. Perhaps they had a nice coffee with an investor, but there was no term sheet. There was no real interest. So don't embellish, don't lie. Now, it seems like kind of common sense, but I think sometimes what entrepreneurs do is they get a little overexcited, like, oh, wow, you know, somebody's interested in what I'm doing. You know, maybe I should just fudge a little bit on how interested they really are. So just stick with the facts. If you are pitching investors, just tell them real factual data. Don't tell them about something that's kind of maybe going to happen as if it's already happened. So don't be a liar. Now, number two is monkey brains. Now, monkey brains, of course, is probably not the best way to put it, but it's just people who are not organized. So they show up 20 minutes late to the meeting because they forgot to look up the address. They haven't researched who they're pitching to, and they haven't researched any of the portfolio companies in the fund. So they're saying things that are completely inappropriate or not a good fit, or they're asking questions because they did not prepare. So don't be a monkey brain. When you're going out to pitch investors, that's your first impression. So you want to make sure that you are giving your best first impression. So always be prepared, know where you're going, research who's going to be at the meeting. You could even ask, who am I pitching to? How many people should I expect? And whoever's organizing the meeting should be able to tell you it's going to be these three people. All their information should be on the website. Do a little bit more research and look up their LinkedIn pages, their Facebook pages, see what companies they're involved in, read their blogs, so that when you show up on time and ready to have a really productive conversation. Now, number three is drama queens, and I see this a lot. I think people confuse passion with being overly salesy, right? So you don't want to show up to a pitch and be a used car salesman, okay? You don't want to be Tony Robbins. No offense to Tony Robbins, he's a great guy, but you want to be realistic and grounded, because a lot of times entrepreneurs get this really pie in the sky, overly excited, way of pitching their company, and it's really a turnoff. You want to be grounded in reality. Of course, you want to have passion, but you don't want to be overly salesy and overly optimistic. Optimism's good, but you don't want to be so far out in the weeds that you're not really seeing what's going on. Now, number four is the biggest one, and this one really, really makes me cringe. Know-it-alls. It's the person who thinks they know everything, and when an investor is trying to give positive feedback, let's say, for example, they have different experience in the industry and they see things a different way. And so if they want to explain that to you, just listen to what they're saying. You can respond with, that's great. I'll go back and look at that. So never respond with, well, that's wrong. That's not how I see it. Or that's not what I think. Or that's not what's true, because it's true for that person. So if the investor is telling you, I think that your assumptions are off because of my experience, I've seen in a different way, then just take it for face value and go back and see if that can be helpful for you. But don't be a know-it-all. Don't say, that's not true, it's this way, it has to be this way, because there's always a different perspective. And hopefully if you're pitching the right investor, that investor is somebody who is going to be able to give you lots of great insight. So next is the rambler. Now, the rambler is the person like me who didn't practice their pitch and has to use notes. And that's perfectly fine. But of course, I wrote the blog post, so I know what's in it. So you want to be able to talk to an investor just like you're having a conversation. So if you're going to pitch, don't rely on your slides. You should not be talking to your slides. You should be talking to the investor. You should have practiced over and over and over again all of your slides. And you've already thought of some of the rebuttals that you're going to have prepackaged for some feedback they're going to give you. So make sure that you're prepared. You don't want to ramble. If you're asked a question and you don't know the answer, simply say, you know what, I don't know the answer, let me get back to you. Don't try to wing it. I've seen this happen so many times, and it's so cringeworthy. Someone doesn't know the answer, so they just keep talking about something else. Now, that just shows that, first of all, you're not paying attention. Second of all, you don't have the maturity and the confidence to say, I don't know it, and you're really just wasting their time. So make sure that you're not being a rambler. Now, the next one is clueless. I heard a funny story from an investor. She said she was talking to an entrepreneur on the phone, and he was pitching her, and he was saying in his slide deck that he has no competitors. There is no competition doing what he's doing. And as they're talking, she's on her computer Googling and looking up six or so competitors. So don't be clueless about your competition. It's so important that you say, hey, this is the competitive landscape. Here's the matrix. Here's what everyone's doing in the ecosystem. And here's how what we're doing is different. And here's what we're learning from our competitors. So when you research it and you actually understand what your competitors are doing and you position yourself as somebody who's doing it different or better, that is coming from a place of having confidence and being prepared. If you simply say we don't have competition, it makes you look completely unorganized, actually insecure, because you don't want to talk about competitors. Be able to look at your competitors, see what they're doing good, see what you can improve on, and just position yourself differently. So don't be clueless. And now that seventh one is Lone Ranger. Now this is the person who wants to be the solo founder, and that's great. But you get to a certain point in your company where you can't always be the solo founder. There's no company in existence that has been run successfully for long periods of time by one person. It takes a village. So if you're meeting with an investor and they say, hey, you know, this is really great, but have you thought about getting a director of sales? Hey, this is really great, but you know, you really need somebody, a CMO, a chief marketing officer. Don't resist that. I see that a lot where people say, oh, you know, we're not really ready to build the team. We really think we have what it takes now. But if your investor is seeing deficiencies, be open and willing to listen to that. So don't be the lone ranger. It's okay to be a solo founder, to get started, get some traction, product market fit. But eventually you do have to grow your team. So don't resist growing your team. And be mature enough to say, you know, yeah, I think you're right. I'm not a good salesperson. I probably should get a salesperson, or whatever the position is that they're propositioning you to do. And that next one is financially challenged. This is the person who has no idea how they're going to make money. They have no idea how much things cost. They come in with a pitch that says it's a $10 billion market. We're going to get 1% of that, and it's going to cost us 30% in SG&A, because that's a pretty good number, 10% in R&D, because somebody said that was a great number somewhere. And they have done no bottom-up analysis on what it takes. So when you're pitching investors, you want to be able to say, hey, this is customer acquisition cost, and we know that because either one, we're out there getting customers, or if you don't have customers, you can say, because we've researched it and we figured out comparable companies, this is how much they are, you know, going out there and spending on the customer. So we know how much it's going to cost. We know what our revenue is going to be because we're building a pipeline, and we've figured out here's, you know, X amount of potential customers we're going to target. Here's what we likely think we can convert. Here's the price we're charging, and that's how we get our revenue assumptions. We don't say it's a $10 billion market and we're going to get 1% of that market, because that's really lazy and it's not really how you build a company anyway. So you might as well just roll up your sleeves, figure out your revenue assumptions and your expense assumptions and what your metrics are, and be able to tell that story. Now, 9 and 10, these are the ones that I recently added this year. Now, 9 is the entourage, and I get this a lot. I advise startups on their funding strategy, and a lot of times my clients say, well, you're going to come to the meeting, right? And I always say, no, I'm not going to come to the meeting, because my job is to make you look good. My job is to help you with your competitive landscape, with your financial model, with your valuation, with your pitch, helping you figure out which investors to pitch to, but I should not be sitting alongside of you. And I see this a lot. Entrepreneurs will bring their attorney, they'll bring everyone on their advisory board, they'll bring their PR person, they'll bring their assistant, and you don't want to do that, because when you're pitching investors, you are selling yourself, especially when you're very, very early stages. You don't have revenue, you don't have customers, it's just an idea. You are selling the investor on your ability to run a company, so they don't want to see your advisors, they don't want to see your attorney, they don't care about your PR person at this point, they just want to see you. So make sure that when you go out and you meet investors that you know each person who's coming with you. Maybe it's you and your CTO, or you and your CEO, and you've already figured out which person is going to talk about what. So you don't just want people coming along for the ride just to make it look like you have this great big team, because nobody cares about that. You want to make sure that every single person that shows up in that meeting has a purpose and there's something that they are there to talk about. So you can trade off. I think a great way to do it is to say you have a CEO and a CTO, and you explain to the CTO, when we get to these slides, I'm going to need your help. And then, you know, you get through the technology slides and then back to the financial slides. The CEO can take over and say, okay, I want to talk about the financials. So it's okay to go back and forth, but just don't bring people that have nothing to talk about in the slides. And that last one, it sounds bad to say this, but I think being a nonconformist is a bad thing. So now When we think about how to conform, we conform to what the rules are. And so most standard term sheets, if it's for a Series A, they're going to ask for a board seat. And I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs push back on that and say, I don't want to give a board seat. And you shouldn't do that. I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs, when they get their term sheet, resist liquidation preference. And we're going to talk about that in week 9 in Startup Finance Lab on YouTube. So figure out what are the norms. You know, typically you're going to have to give a board seat, you know, and typically there's liquidation preference, there's rights. One of the things I see very common is who gets to decide, you know, what happens in certain situations. A common one is if an acquirer comes along and wants to buy the company, who gets to say yes or no to that price? So there's a lot of different things that happen in the term sheet that are very common, and you want to make sure that you understand, you know, what is the norm, and you don't want to be the nonconformist. You don't want to be that person who has this great term sheet but is fighting really hard against this one term that is something that is completely normal and completely expected.